Welcome to the CEN Show, the voice of the world community, the CommunityEducationNetwork.com, the podcast Conscious Corner, and this show are platforms of educational content where we learn from the community. Our philosophy is each one teach one. We know that the power is in the people, and with a constructive mindset, our world condition can improve. On Monday, July 18th, that's two days ago, on Conscious Corner, Professor Amin-Ra presented some valuable information that must be heard, in my opinion. And historian Joe Hembrick and Brother Mashinda made some excellent comments on the subject matter. I encourage everyone to listen to this, but it's on YouTube, and it's a Black community news forum, and you can get it on also the website and at CommunityEducationNetwork.com, and you go to the podcast section, and it's on audio, and that's how you can access it. But to me, it's a must hear, so check that out. Okay, I'm your host, Roski Mascani. Tonight's guest is the conductor. And the topic is the cutthroat reality of true Black economics. Good evening, Brother Conductor. Please tell us about yourself and then start your presentation.
My name is Marshawn Kenty from Compton, California. I'm an economic developer. Pretty much trying to get together what we need to do to kind of build an economic strength for our people. One of the major things that has happened is the economic suppression that has happened from slavery really until now, and the stigmatic racism that has happened between that has allowed us not to really be able to create economically. And one of the key major factors is that we're now in 2022, there is a lot of opportunity and financial growth for us to be able to make money with our culture and who we are. But there are just some things that just seem to be in the way economically. And a lot of major factors is that we really have a hard time kind of creating our own economic space in our country that we have here in America. And being able to create an economic space with our merchandising and production and doing it at a pace where we have to compete with competitive or competition in a sense. So our major problem is it's not the fact that we can't economically bring things out. It's just that people find it very opportunistic in our culture to find opportunities of wealth from it. And so they make it very hard to eat because they kind of have more resources or accesses to production faster than we can get it to. And so we seem to be always stagnant or kind of lost in the hem, even in our own products and things that we bring to the table. So that's one of the major factors that we seem to be coming into our culture about. And so that's one of the things that we have to kind of do as far as when it comes to a cutthroat economics, it's kind of becoming more selfish. You know, we share too much of our culture with the world so much that the world believes it's theirs. And with that being done, it has allowed our kids not to eat and everybody else's kids to eat. And so it's come to a system where everybody else's kids seems to be eating off of our culture more than our own kids are. And we don't eat up for anybody's culture. And so that has to come a place where we as Black people have to kind of shift and look back and say, you know, kind of cherish our culture and cherish each other as if like everybody else. But a lot of people say it's kind of hard for us to essentially do that. You know, I hear a lot of people talking about the mental illness and things that go on in the Black community. And it's a little irritating because it's kind of like, you know, well, Black people, they shoot and they kill each other. But my concern is when you say we do that, the people that come from the other countries, what are they running from? You know, aren't they running from people that's their race, that's from where they from? And so when they come to this country, they're fleeing what? Some kind of suppression, some kind of death. You know, if they went and picketed in their country, they would get shot and killed. So why is it that when we do the same thing that they do, they get a chance to come to America? But we as Black people, we don't have an America to go to. We don't have that position where we can put ourselves and say, oh, man, when I was in Compton, born and raised in Compton, and they shoot, my mom didn't have an America to say, come on, Marshawn, I'm taking you to this place where you can get away from punishment and these things. We didn't have that place. We had to fight for it. You know, like I tell people, there's no difference from cowboys and gangs. They were posses on horses, on guns that went up and shot up people that they wanted to. So what's the difference? They were 100 years. And what happened to cowboys? They discovered oil. They discovered gold. And once they discovered these things, trading these platforms and things, they started to get out of that. And so, yeah, we did the same thing. They did the same thing we did, just 100-year difference, you know? And so it's like, you know, but we have a mental illness. when they were Cowboys, they celebrate the movies, they get this and get this and this. It is wrong, but at the same time, it's something that everybody faces in the evolution of their of their of their beings, of coming to a race as wherever they landed in the country, there was some kind of civil war and things that broke out. You know, and so we're being in our own situation here in America, and not really having a outsourced resource for someone to protect us like everybody else kind of has. They kind of have a secondary country that if it gets too dirty or too bad for them, that other country can come down and look and say, hey, man, what's going on over here? And we don't have that. We only have each other. And so the thing is that, you know, we seem to be the most hardest on ourselves because we were always trained to kind of compete with each other. Kind of like when we used to get dressed for school, when I got dressed for high school, the first day of high school, I was trying to look fresher than the black dude. I wasn't worried about any other race. So from childhood as a teen, I grew up trying to make sure I stunned and looked better than my people or than my brother who was at school. The first day of school, I'm going to be fly. I got to make sure I'm fly. So the competition began then. And then we sit back and say, well, why? We always compete with each other. Well, we started that in a sense. We kind of built that up. And so those are kind of things where we have to be able to look at each other and be able to understand that there's nobody who has not done what we've done or not doing what we're doing. The thing is they can come to in America, and we don't have that. We build Americas. And so we got to understand this is the process and the goal that we need to kind of focus our attention on economically. So I will stop there and see if there was any questions or anything that anybody might have before I continue.
Okay. So with what you just said, what can we do as a race to change that situation where we'd be able to economically support ourselves and do what we need to do for ourselves. So what would be at least one solution for that?
Well, there are several solutions for it. The first thing is we have to kind of reinvent our culture and take part of our culture back. Again, we have too many people accessing our culture where we can't. And so let me give you an example. If there was a country music station, there was an Asian music station, a Latin music station, and we got a hip-hop music station, usually when that country music station is hiring, the Asian one is hiring, or the Latin one is hiring, most of their people are going to go to that piece, and they're going to hire a majority of their people. But when the hip-hop radio station opens, the black guy got to compete with everybody for that job. Everybody's running to that to be the DJ for that one. Nobody's running. That people don't run over there to be DJs anywhere else. So when we go, we have that competitive factor in our own culture. We can't dominate. So you can listen to radio stations here in LA and you hear all types of races on their radio station, but you will never hear blacks on their radio station at all. So there's an uncompromising difference that happens when it comes to economic growth. We talk about, you know, the partnership with everybody, but remember, we're 7% of the California population and represent 40% of the home business. That means everybody's not renting, everybody's not hiring us, but they are utilizing our culture to finally get ahead. So the first thing we have to do is kind of segment things to go our way, in a sense, back to take control of back what we have, like our Ebonics. You know, the one thing is, you know, at first, you know, we always had the hood, you know, the ghetto, and then the ghetto turned to urban, and now people don't want to say they're black. Now, no other race involves or introduces anything to the urban culture. If you're talking slang, if you dance, the walk, everything is urban. It's basically black. But the thing is I don't want to say I'm being black. The other races don't want to say they're being black. So I have to find another way to say I'm being black without saying I'm being black. Oh, I'm urban. Now, what as a black man, what does it take for me to be suburban? See, that's the question. Like, how can I become suburban? If you can become urban by basically mimicking everything I do, you're urban now because you talk like me, you walk like me, you're using Ebonics because Ebonics not used no more. Now it's just, you know, the talk of the modern age, just the modern talk. You know, we lost everything. You know, there was a time when you had a difference between black newscasters or sportscasters when the black people, we talked a little different. There was a little urban talking the way, bada boo, you know, and then they had their own way of talking. So it made a difference. But if you notice now, everybody talk urban. Everybody's urban. And so it's just like as me as black man, I can never be anti-Semitic to you. Never. There's nothing I can do as a black man and you a black man to be anti-Semitic to each other. That's something that is stronghold. Now, we all know Hitler did a lot to everybody else, but we know that's theirs. That's theirs. The atrocities that happen to you, we get that. We have our own atrocities to deal with. And that's where the word racism comes in. We have allowed people to take. Now, we've been hung on trees by the thousands. When Lynch landed here, he came and seen us hung by trees on thousands. He's like, man, y'all got to stop doing this. This is unethical. You know what I'm saying? He couldn't understand why y'all just hanging. It's better. He wrote a whole letter on how to teach them how to do it. So we were hung on trees by the thousands. We were ripped of our language. Our language, we couldn't speak our language here. When someone says, they told me to go back to my country, speak my own language, speak English here. That's racist. What? You were never hung on trees. The people were never ripped and raped from their families by kids and sold for 100 years. So why do you get to call white people racist? And we're like, in your country, when you get violated by your own people that make you flee to America, what is that called there? What is the reason why you flee from your country and you say, I'm going to go to America because of the atrocities that are happening in your country? When you pack your kids up and you say, I'm leaving. When that man who is the president that is your race, that speaks your language, makes you run from his country, what is that called? But they're not going to say what that's called. It's okay. It's okay and it's fine. But they can come here and take our blood and sweat and everything we died for. See, there's a difference in what we did when we had to fight. See, everybody else had an opportunity to come to America. But see, we didn't have to. So we had to turn around and put our fist up and knuckle up and keep knuckling up until we achieved civil rights. Now, see, everybody else seen us knuckling up and they said, I'm going to go to that country. Nobody seen us knuckle up and said, man, I'm going to turn around and knuckle up too and make sure I get my civil rights here where I am. No, I'd rather go there and get the civil rights they got. But they call us the monkeys. We the bottom of the barrel. How does this happen? So the main thing we need to do is stand hold and take our word racism back, because you don't have a right to use it, because you have never been treated racism at all. Your people have never been sold in this country. So why do you get to use the word racism? Why is that a word that you get to utilize for yourself? You have, your people have never been through that, but you just cross over, never hung on trees by the millions, never had your name and your language took from you, but you get to say the word racism. See, that's a power, because see, whenever the day comes that we work all racism, deal out with white people, they still gonna have this race, calling them racist still. And the only person they have to deal with is between us and the Indians. You don't have nothing to do with this conversation. You have never been treated this. So you need to find the same word. But when you find that word, make sure you use that word for your people at home and make you come here. It's nothing personal. But at what point do we step up as Adam and Eve and say, you know, it was nothing wrong with the Black Lives Matter situation. I see what they did. The problem I have was, what happened to us going to God? All that energy that was pressed out, marching. Man, what happened to us singing hymns to God? When have Adam and Eve went to their own daughters and sons and told them, my life matters? How do we do that? How does Adam and Eve go to his children and say, my life matters, without going to God? We failed. And so economically, we're getting back the benefits of what happens when you go crying to man instead of God. And now what do we have? More killing and more murderers. The more they get mad at the immigration situation, they get mad and start killing us. They mad at us. They mad at us. The oil prices is messed up, everything is down, and it's our fault. It's our fault. Ones who been hung on trees, and 7% represent all 60% of all the homeless in all of America. It's our fault. Nobody say nothing. We got mental issues. How we got mental issues? We can't make money anywhere. I'm sorry.
Brother Conductor.
Yeah.
Now you didn't say it a mouthful. Now, one thing I want to focus on, you mentioned racism. See, what a lot of the things that you're saying is what's been put in place for us to be in the position we're in. But when you have a clarity of terminology like racism. Now, Professor Rye's on here, and he taught many lessons on the definition of racism. And if you kind of, you know, make it simple as possible. You know, racism, what we know, is a system of government. And And it primarily has white power structure, because it's a system. It has the white power structure as the head. And then all the people of color is basically, you know, lumped into one category, but even though things are segmented. So there's got to be some clear terminology for people to understand. So I'm going to let Professor Rod talk a little bit about racism, and then we'll go around the, because you said a lot there. You know, you made a lot of points, and you said it real fast. So I'm pretty sure people caught some of the things that you said, but I want to first start off with Professor Rod by him explaining what racism really is from a simple perspective. And that way we can kind of put some things into context from there. And then I'll go around the panel and we'll get some questions and comments for you. Okay, Professor Ra.
Appreciate what you asked, but I understand correctly. First of all, I want to welcome the conductor. I'm glad that he's on the show and appreciate what he said and his narrative of why we have issues with economics. But to get back to your question, racism is a system of government, culture. It deals with affecting people's lives and the administration of justice, the distribution of goods and services, and the and the morbidity and mortality of life to people. There's a difference between being prejudiced, exploited, and discriminated against, and racism. Racism is built primarily by white folks. They build systems of government, laws, courts, and that affect a whole mass of people. Sometimes people have an individual experience, which is probably prejudice, and they say it's racism. Racism is when I was demonstrating with the Natasha Harlan case, after the case we came out and they did an interview with me. And I told them then, I said, murder is murder. What that Asian woman, Miss Du, did to Tasha was murder. Racism was the judge that let the lady go on probation. And no other court intervened, no federal civil rights or government intervened and said that was wrong. And that, if, you know, even though Ms. Du was an Asian, we came up, if you're yellow, it's mellow. If you're brown, stick around. If you're black, get back. If you're white, you're all right. There are three major systems of racism that has been recognized by the United Nations and defined by the United Nations for years. One is apartheid that's expressed in Africa, mainly in South Africa. That means living apart based upon your race, and it is structured by a government. At the end of the year, you can apply for a race change to get more status or to move up. The second one is Zionism, that is generally operated in Israel by white Jews who claim to be Jews, but they set up a governmental system called Zionism, meaning that the only people that will ever be in government have privilege or power will be the white Jews. And that was defined as racism by the United Nations all the way up to the late 80s. And then Euro-American racism is a system of government, whereas, and culture and tradition. And that's what you see coming out in this day and age with the various rulings of the Supreme Court, the various rulings in superior courts when police shoot black people, they don't get charged with murder. All those type of things. So, I appreciate him. Now, what I really appreciate what Brother Conductor is talking about And I'd like to hear some more of what he's saying, because, you know, he mentioned hip hop and people still in hip hop. And that was our culture. And that we have no place to go. But Ghana and other parts of Africa, Tanzania, Nigeria have always welcomed Black people who wanted to leave America and come back. In fact, as Joe said, the majority of Black people are in Brazil. We always ask the question, why do Black people stay in the South if it's so bad? Well, people are homogeneous. They get used to a way of life and they're comfortable in it. They learn it, even if it's oppressive, you know? So there's a lot to it. But from the standpoint of economic development, this is a capitalistic society. That means individualism. That means making money off money. Black people make money around the world. Michael Jackson and stuff still around the world. You know, hip hop is around the world. You have every culture at using. And many, I mean, Jay-Z them and Beyonce, they're a world act. They sing in every country, sell out arenas. We do have Black people that, but music is not our culture. Black music, things about Black people. What they're singing about is different things. With a culture, you ritualize being Black. Christians ritualize Jesus. Muslims ritualize Muhammad. They make up songs. That's part of a ritualization. They come up with a flag. They got a philosophy. They define life from the beginning to the end. They tell you what to eat, how to eat. You have holidays. That's a culture, not, no, you ask, what is hip hop philosophy of life? What is hip hop of morality and ethics? What is hip hop? A culture is who's doing, practicing the culture. The culture is what you, is the head of the culture. Jesus is the cult. Christians is a cult. Muslims are a cult. Muhammad is the cult. They ritualize Muhammad. Judaism, same way. So I just think we have to get clarity on, you know, use science, social science, to define the concept. If not, you take the oppressive definition of racism, and you end up calling yourself one. That's about it, Roger Key.
Thanks, Professor Rod. So I'm going to go around the panel, and then we'll get back to, and then, do you, first of all, conductor, do you have any response to what Professor Rod said?
No, I understand exactly what he was saying. I do want to point out that, you know, America has been known for a racist company since 1776. I mean, you know, we have known of racism and what they've done for slavery. So I feel like if it's a dope house or apartment building that you know is owned by dope dealers, and you rent out a place in that apartment building, you should expect to see some dope dealers walking around. To go into that apartment building that you know is owned by dope dealers, and you know it's a big apartment, thousands of people that stay in the apartment building, but you're going to expect to see some dope dealers because there's no way possible you could come to this country and not know its history. So, I mean, you know what I'm saying? I feel like, you know what I'm saying, if you walk into that circle, I mean, you would expect one or two people to sell some dope around you, out of those people. So you expect that. So I don't feel like it should be I don't feel like it should be as harsh a feeling as it has for us who lost everything, our whole dignity. I mean, like I tell women, they just lost y'all. I just started being able to give y'all virginity ways in the freaking, what, 1900s? 1800s, y'all couldn't keep y'all virginity. Y'all lost y'all name and y'all virginity. Y'all was 13, 14 walking around. There was no 15-year-old Black women walking around with their virginities in 1800s, 1700s. You know, so it's just, you know, I hear, but I understand his point exactly. I digress.
Okay, thanks. All right, Sister Aziza, welcome back. Haven't seen you in a while. How you doing?
I'm well. Glad to be here. Thanks for, you know, always having a good show.
Okay, so do you have a question or comment for Brother Conductor?
Not at this moment. I was just going to say that, you know, his point of view is very insightful, and I can understand, you know, how he feels, where he's coming from. Just speaking by myself personally, you know, just having some kind of like identity crisis at some point in time in life and how it affected me. So that's how I kind of put it into perspective of what he's saying about, you know, our culture and, you know, just the mixing of everything. Just there's really no identity, you know, for, I'm just going to say Black people. I don't know if I'm right or not, but I have felt that. But that's pretty much all I had to say. I don't want to expand no more. Thank you.
All right. Thanks. All right. We got Sister Make It Happen is here tonight. Sister Make It Happen.
Greetings. Greetings, family.
How are you?
Greetings, elders. Greetings, fam, and greetings, conductor. Greetings to everyone here. And I'm doing well. How are you, sir?
Fine. Thanks for coming. Questions, comments?
Yes, I just wanted to give some feedback to the conductor brother. I hear a lot of passion in what he's saying and frustration, you know, as it relates to culture vultures and people jumping on the bandwagon and taking a lot of our thunder, so to speak. But what I want to share that's important is for us as a family to be able to support sacredness of our culture. Because yes, a lot of our culture has become the joke and it has been given up repeatedly. And personally speaking, I feel like the social media is making it worse. But forums like this has given us a sacred space to where we can begin to hold some of our culture and put some rights in place, you know, some rights and passages in place, some things in place to where it is for us and not for everyone. So that is important for us to have a sense of ourselves so that, you know, because some of us don't have a place to go in terms of a land mass. This is our mass. We are the Aboriginal. This is our home right here. So therefore, we must hold on to our culture here and our sacredness and stop, I agree with him, giving everything away for free and everybody eating off of us and we have nothing. So I do agree with you 100% in that sense. But as a family, we have to then be able to put some sacredness in spaces for us like this space and begin to, you know, build that validity and valid of our culture and holding on to what's important to us so that we don't feel lost, you know, and having crisis in identity, but we have spaces where we can reinforce our identity and our culture. You know, we have Professor Amin Ra here. We have some powerful people here that help to hold down our culture for us here in this North America right here. So it's there, but we have got to make sure that we hold the sacredness of it and yes, stop giving it away and yes, be able to feed ourselves. So that's what I want to share with the family.
All right. Thank you. Sister Linda, question, comments?
Oh, yes. And thank you, conductor, for everything you said. And I agree with what she said about you being passionate and frustrated at the same time. And my question to you, conductor, because I'm an entrepreneur. Now, how do I protect myself and keep doing what I'm doing and sharing my knowledge with the community and the culture?
Okay.
How do I protect myself and keep moving forward?
We can, if somebody else want to ask some questions for that, so that way I won't go too long, I'll hold that up note, and if any more questions, then I'll answer all of them at once.
Okay, I got a few, three more people to go to. So you got that question, right?
Yes.
Okay.
I have an answer to that already.
What's that?
No, I had an answer to that already. I'm ready for the next one.
So you wanna answer that?
No, I'm ready for the next question. I'm sorry. My apologies.
Okay. Brother Doctor?
No, yeah, I agree with what everybody else was saying. His passion. He recognized the issue that's going on, like all of us. And, he recognized what's going on, but we don't know how to fix it. There's ways to fix it, but no one's willing to sacrifice. It's just going to keep happening. We're going to keep doing it. Paying us, peanuts, and they're making the big money. It's going to keep happening. So, but let's agree everything he says. There's an issue, and it's never going to change. As long as those are getting paid big bucks, they're going to keep getting paid big bucks. As long as they're there's a way to make a profit, it's going to keep happening.
Okay, Brother Doctor. Okay, Brother Mashinda?
No, I don't really have any comments. Thank Brother Conductor for his commentary. Appreciate his enthusiasm and his passion. So I'm in agreement with a lot of you saying he's talking fast, doesn't can go. So I'm gonna continue to listen. I wanna thank you.
All right, Brother Mashinda. Okay. Brother Joe.
Yeah. Appreciating the brother's comments. He was going a little fast. It was kind of hard to keep up. I was cutting stuff here and there, but I would just like to say that we can never free ourselves using any of the tenements of our former master. And that's what we're caught up in most cases. And till we get back to what we were about before we met any other people on the planet, it's going to be a tough situation. And I would just like to say that we need to try to stay in tune with nature, which was there at the beginning, and study what our folk were doing then and how we prospered. But whenever you try to capitalize on a system that used you as a captive in the first place, it's kind of a difficult task, and we'll keep stumbling and bumbling around. And I'd like to also say that every other ethnic group on this planet has borrowed from us, from the so-called cultural aspects of African-Americans, African-Caribbeans, other people follow behind us and use, the stuff we put out there. And, but that's just since we've been here. But like I said, in terms of knowing thyself, which we do not know. Heard a lot of stuff about Adam and Eve and all of that. Most folks who have listened to me in the past know my thoughts on that. We had great civilizations that have risen and fallen before there ever was, such as the biblical characters of Adam and Eve. And I'll just leave that there for people to do their own research in that regard. But I'm going to continue to listen and see what I can get out of what the brother is saying. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Brother Hembrick. Okay, so the conductor, you can respond to Linda's question, Miss Linda.
Okay. Yeah. So, it really boils down to a major part, and it seems so small, but it's really big, huge for us. When you talk about like the 80s, you had a lot of immigrants. They would sell a lot of oranges on the freeway. And you would see them selling oranges by the freeways, and you would see them with a basket, and about a year later, they would have a truck and a car. You know what I'm saying? And you would see the progression of that. But you probably never, ever seen black people ever go and start selling oranges on the freeway. We allow them to be like, that's the hustle that y'all got. We understand where y'all come from. That's y'all thing. We as black people, we had our own hustle. We was doing what? They were selling bootleg DVDs and CDs, right? The tapes. you know? And so what happened was, as we never ever started to sell oranges and allowed them to sell their oranges and get their hustle on in place, everybody came and they seen us selling DVDs and they said, listen, and bootleg tapes and what they do. Now, this is the small hustle. This is not even on entrepreneur level. This is the dude that getting out of prison, need to make some money to get his thing. So he like, I can't get a job. Let me go just make some bootleg DVDs, stand in front of Nick Checkhash in the 70s. This is my little hustle for us. But then what had to happen is everybody seen that hustle and said, oh, I'm going to do that too. So now we competing with all the other black dudes and everybody else. Oh, this is just on the smallest level. Now, you know, we love our birthday parties, but black people have never went and started opening up their own pinata companies, their own hachata stores. You know what I'm saying? We never did that. We let everybody have their culture. We don't open up Chinese restaurants and things of that nature, but everybody else opens up soul food restaurants. Like I said, when Black China came out with her hair lashes, as soon as that popped in, Maybelline and everybody else came out with eyelashes. It became the biggest thing. I mean, I see once black women started going to eyelashes and start building those up and doing an eyelash thing, I mean, you see every company that was doing nails started opening up eyelash thing. So black women never had a chance to get her shop open because she had to compete with 15 different shops right there. Now, black women have to supported nail shops, Asian nail shops for years. So economically, what I struggle with is seeing like, how can we make some money and start to build it? But we can't, because again, when it comes to cars ride by with the booming system, we make that famous through our culture. Everybody says, oh, I'm going to go buy auto equipment and sell it. We want to do it. Everybody's want to do it too. The same thing with the rims. We make rims famous. We sell it. Everybody else want to sell it. So we can't make money now because we got to compete with everybody. So it's hard for your one company where five or six different ethnicities are selling it too. So how are we supposed to move? So if black women tomorrow came out, oh, the hottest new thing is glow-in-the-dark nails. If glow-in-the-dark nails became the hottest thing, she wouldn't be able to even get her store opened up, because you know what? It'd be sold in every single store that's possible before she could even get it up. So there has to be some break off from us economically with other ethnicities to be able to say, now we have two projects that we're working to try to put together. We want 5,000 businesses in their countries. We have supported a lot of entities in our communities, in our black community. Y'all sold us alcohol for years in our communities, you know? And so why can't we have 5,000 businesses, small businesses in Korea, 5,000 businesses in China, 5,000 businesses in Mexico or somewhere in South America? Why can't we? We supported many businesses there. This would be a great way of transfer of power and financial money, so that way we have businesses out there that's making money here that we can just, you know, I can sit down a little bit. I ain't got to work as hard because my money out there in Africa, my money out there in China, the company I got out there in Korea, and create these relationships, because we sent a lot of different ethnicity kids to school in our communities. They own pretty much everything there. And it's been like that for years. So where is the reverse back? Because they're never going to allow us to open up our own rim shop. If we brought throwback jerseys back tomorrow, they're not going to come and shop in our store. They're going to do what? They're going to bring it to their store, open up a one-section shop to them. So how do we create our own swap meet? If we put our own swap meet together and we did that, how do we do that? Because they already got it. Now you're competition. Remember, you have, what, 10,000 beauty supply stores in America? 9,000 owned by Koreans, 10,000 owned by blacks. So how does that work? How do 5,000 black women say, I want to open my beauty supply? Now they don't have to manufacture their own products and getting that product, and where that come? Just like the young black girls that had their new company going. And what Korea did, when they were shipping for their product, they shipped it to them for way more than they shipped it to their own people for. And so when that happens, you get the atmosphere where we lose. Because the product that we had to buy from them, say, I'm buying this from you, was $10 for you. But for my people, I'm only going to sell it for $4. So we're not in a position to move like that. So we have to get the people around us, outside of the government, to say, hey, it's about time we all pay homage to economics together. We win together as a team. It's not a problem, but the thing is, it's hard for us to create. I'm sorry, somebody interrupt. Somebody wanted to say something?
Well, I wanted to interject a little bit.
Okay.
Before I lose, I wrote down a few points that you brought up. And Ms. Linda was talking about, how do I, you know, protect that? Well, see, this is exactly why we had this platform. Now, let me just say a few things. We had a guest from Ghana, and she's over in Ghana doing business. She lived here in the United States, but she's been there for about 2 years. But she's doing business in Ghana. and we have 9 people here. There's ways to contact her and be able to feed her business in Ghana, especially when you want to travel over to Ghana and you have a place to stay. There, the networking is a possibility to start harnessing, you know, if you want, because the market is free. These markets are free. So whoever has the desire to have a product and sell those products, you're able to do that as long as you're doing it legally. And sometimes people are doing it illegally and they get away with it. Now, that's one thing. Another thing, my daughter is fully licensed as a, I don't know the correct terminology, but it's, I know she does the feet and the nails. Is it called podiatry? I don't know. I don't know the correct terminology for feet and nails. But yes, say that again, Miss Linda.
Yes, yes, it's podiatrist. Yes.
Okay. Well, thanks. I got it right. Okay.
Yes, if she's healing, but pain in the nail, and she's doing
cosmetology.
Oh, cosmetology.
Okay. She's my wife just told me she's a manicurist. So now she's fully licensed and she has, she travels to do her services. And also she has a place where she's housed to do it there at a shop. And it's right across the street from the SoFi Center. So she's local. So we got everybody here is potentially a person that would want feet and nails done just to keep your, you know, things, you know, working and functioning good. It don't have to be for beautification. It could be for, you know, just upkeep of your feet and nails. So we have a network of people here. You guys can give your business to her. And she's good. I wouldn't say she's bad, but she is good. And I have, it's people in the family that get their feet and nails done, their hands done. So these are ways we have a platform here. We have to network and just to make it happen. Said family, we gotta make this whatever we want. We gotta bring it into fruition. So you know we have a contact in Ghana now for travel in Africa and even other things going on in Africa. And then we have a person that's a manicurist in my family that could do hair, nails. So we have to network and make sure we're giving our business to Black people that are in there. Well, and yeah, also well, develop. Also well, develop businesses. Go ahead.
It's a little different, you know, on an aspect of it. You got to remember something. In all these countries that a lot of the people come here from, a lot of the immigrants come here from, if you go to their countries, especially the lighter hue ones, they have people that look like us in their country. They have people that look like us in their country, you know. And if you look in those countries, those people really are treated, really are in the worst conditions in their countries. If you go to anywhere in South America or in Asian places where the darker people live, those places are really the poorest places in those countries. So the lighter hue people have a very different outlook when they see people of dark skin, just from growing up in those communities, are just saying that they always look at them as that. So when they come here, the mentality kind of stays the same. They just know that there was a little heartache there and they got a little bit more than the people we from, but still the class range doesn't mentally change. So if your daughter and we work together, we said, okay, you're a manicurist and we're going to do a TM manicures franchise, a TM manicure franchise for you, where you're going to have tea, manicure, and we're going to get special herbs from Ghana. It's going to be the most listening tea. What's going to happen is every other manicure shop in there that's owned by every other race, they're going to start doing T2. They won't let us be because they don't respect us economically to say, oh, that's theirs. See, we don't have, like I said, that country, like everybody else can build their money up and then go. See, they can come here open up a business, that money can come and they can send that money back to the country. And then that money goes off the country to another business, and the money they're making from that business outside the country can help fund what they're doing here. So we need to do the same thing here too. But it's hard for us to do it because as we start to grow, by the time she gets to her fifth franchise, it's already 15 tea and manicure places already by everybody else. So if we don't get them to respect the 2023 economic growth of African Americans and saying, look, there are some businesses that you're going to see in your community, and we would please be honored if you allow those businesses to thrive. Because every time we open up a business in there, our competitive factor is immediately. It's not like we got to compete with just one person across the street. See, we don't have a problem with people doing our culture. The thing is, they want to be the Coca-Cola and the Pepsi in the culture. That's the problem. Let us be the Coca-Cola. Let us be the Pepsi. And you be the Shasta. You know what I'm saying? You be the Springfield Sodas. And that's the problem. You know what I'm saying? Let us do that. And so that's where we need to put the aspects at. Because that's not what's hurting us. What's hurting us is that they don't feel comfortable walking into the store buying from us because it feels demeaning. To go buy it from get into their store.
Okay. So, what's going to change that narrative is you and me, and the people on here. We have to work towards building Black businesses and developing Black businesses.
Roger,
we can't. I don't think we. Okay, Professor Rod, I'm going to say this one point, and then I'm going to go to you. We have identified a lot of issues that goes on and all the competition we have when it comes to business. But what's going to make a business strong is the person that starts the business and they do the things that they have to do to make the business thrive. And if you have a will and desire to do these things, it's going to happen. This is why we're doing this right now, because we making this happen, and we're going to do more.
Yeah.
This is just a start right here.
Mm-hmm. Before you let the pastor, I just wanted to say...
It's a mentality that's going to push us in the direction we need to go. Professor Rob wanted to say something. Go ahead, Professor Rob.
You know, I taught a course, Black Economics in the Black Community. You'd be surprised at the Black businesses that Black people own that you don't even know that they own. I mean, we got, and I'm not, you know, the local ones, of course, barbershop. We used to have shoe shine stores. We used to sell the Jet. We used to sell newspapers. We worked our way up. Barry Gordy had to borrow money from his family to start Motown. It's a little house if you go to Detroit. Then he got a big mansion and a skyscraper here in Hollywood. The same thing with Johnson Magazine in Ebony. He borrowed $700 and then he started his business. There was Black businesses that used to go off up and down Wilmington and Central in the hearts of Watts. Compton used to have a number of Black businesses, downtown Compton, where they had their theater, where they had a specific Second Pacific Bank on one side, Bank of America, JCPenney, then Black shops up and down the street. We had hamburger stands before McDonald's. We had and Jack in the Box. They wouldn't even come to our community when we were selling it until they saw a market for it. And they came in here with these 15-cent hamburgers in 90 at that time. Many Black people had sold their businesses. They sold their businesses because the people was offering them a made them offer they couldn't refuse. You know, and then I agree with the brother. Yeah, there's prejudices in other countries, but other countries don't have immigration policies. You know, that a lot of it. The only reason the masses of Black people in this country right now is because they were a part of human trafficking and the Holocaust of enslavement. If you're trying to be a Black person and come to America now, it'd be very hard, unless you have resources. But we got Black billionaires. We got Black people that own schools, own major shops. Black Enterprise used to put out a magazine, 100 top Black businesses. And, you know, at one time, Fedco was operated by a black person. I mean, you know, I know we can always look at the negative, but also look at the best that we do in service and in prosperity. Look at what Jay-Z doing. Look at the brother just gave $10 million to Compton High to start, or $20 million to start a performing arts at the new campus. LeBron James opened up a school. We opened up schools on the continent of Africa. Now, he right. Prejudice, racism, you got it, Rusty. Rusty told us years ago, racism was a global dynamic. It wasn't just in America. You understand? Yeah, they just had an article on Chinese racism. It's beneficial for them to practice racism, to keep us out of their government, to make them feel better about themselves, so they try to get us to feel bad about ourselves. But I don't perpetuate that. I think that, you know, we're moving. Yeah, it's a struggle, but there's a lot of progress that Black people are making today. And for us to be where we are today, we got Brother Doctor on here, Brother Joe, entrepreneurs, they own property. Just today, they had to give the deed to the Bruce Beach. It took years for them to struggle to get the property back. If you're looking for Black people to support Black businesses, it's gonna be hard. People buy things that's convenient. They do it on Amazon now. It made it even worse as far as doing Black businesses. You know, people don't even go out and shop no more. They have people dropping off food at their house. Things change. And we have to develop businesses that change also. And I'm for economic development, but the continent of Africa, no matter how much, as I conclude, we go through, it's still the richest continent on the planet when it comes to precious metals and natural resources. It's the Garden of Eden of life. Everything that go into a car come out of the continent of Africa and making a car. But at the same time, we don't control the resources. Why? Because as Joe say, and as the good doctor say, and as Mashinda say, we don't have the power, the military power, keep our stuff defend ourselves. And most Black people, you know, many of them don't necessarily think that way, because they, as Joe said, they've been trained by the oppressor. To teach you to live a certain life and you don't know it limits you in your thinking. And that's what I hear you saying is we got to start teaching our young people, Rasha T, and the conductor, to think economics. When we're coming up, I'm thinking basketball. You know, many of the women I dealt with were thinking being beautiful. No, big breasts, big lips, big butt, you know, that showing it, mini skirts and all that. They weren't thinking about no money. They were thinking about somebody marrying them and taking care of them. Then when it don't get happened, they get depressed. And, you know, so it's a struggle, but it's all about our culture consciousness. That comes from the home. Teach your kids to think. Teach them the value of education. Teach them the value of loving each other and sharing businesses with each other. You're not going to just criticize us into changing our behavior. That's a train and, you know, reward or punishment. You know, that's about Asante Sana,
right? All right, conductor.
Yeah. I'm Atlantean, man. You know what I'm saying? I like my Atlantean, you know. I hear everything you're saying, but, you know, to be straightforward and be honest without, you know, to be honest with you, you know, black woman goes to school, goes to Harvard, gets on the dating list. She's ready to be employed now. Name one black corporation she can go to make the money she deserves to make like she make at Amazon. I'll wait for it. I'm going to wait for it. I want to know, name me one of the black corporations that's a household name, that's like Coca-Cola, that's like Pepsi, that's like Kellogg's. I just want one black-owned corporation. Brother, just one name. That's a household name.
Brother, you see? A black woman runs that.
I'm not talking about rent. I'm talking about ownership. You see, I'm kind of past my business mindset. We need to get into manufacture and production. That's part. You know what I'm saying? I was leading on to
name one that would be working at a major corporation. That's what you said first. But when you start talking about owning stuff, that's a whole different game.
What I'm saying is. When you say Coca-Cola, you know Amazon, Jeff Bezos. Now, we know Magic Johnson is one of the richest and what's the name, man, Dr. Dodgers and everything. Well, what's the name of his corporation? Magic Johnson's corporation? The one that owns part of the Lakers and owns the Dodgers and stuff. What's the name of his corporation? Gotta have a corporation. What's the name of it? Shaquille got a lot of money too, right? What's the name of Shaq's corporation? What I'm trying to say is as an entrepreneur and I structure my business and I say I want to be like Amazon, but I want to do it the way the black man did it. When we start to pinpoint that out, most of the time they end up setting it before they get to achieve that opportunity to be that successful company. And then there are all those that exist, but we don't know their names. For some reason, they stay hidden. It's like we don't get a chance to know who that are. So as I'm working with these young men, because I got the plan set up. I got our young youth, who we're doing right now in San Diego. We're teaching them, and we're teaching them electric cars, how to make and break down electric cars. So they're breaking down and fixing electric cars. So when they graduate from this class, they're going to go and open up their own businesses in the electric cars. Because right now, all the mom and pop stores, they're all gas cars. So if our kids are off the front doing electric cars now, training, when the next year, our kids are going to be the first ones opening up mom and pop stores that are going in there without electric cars coming. We're training them how to fix these charging stations and how to break these charging stations, how to add solar power to these charging stations. Because as this charging station is going up, all these houses, oh, my charging station broke. Well, who are they going to call? Well, we train those kids right now. We know McDonald's is going into all this robotics and they're going to put these robots in machines. Well, somebody got to fix those machines. So we're training kids on fixing those machines. We're looking at new recipes coming from out of Africa. We're teaching our young black girls how to do these recipes, and then we're giving them catering trucks. Take this catering truck and go take off. Here's your entrepreneurial business. So it's not as if we don't know what to do and how to do it to make sure we have the structure in place. The problem is staying the structure in place and getting our fun on it. So that way it holds legitimacy for us in the future so that young black kids can look and say, I want to be like that. I want to be like Coca-Cola, but I feel like I want to black something black. It's very easy to go get to use our culture in your music to sell your stuff. See, you go get, you if you Kia, you hire somebody black, now you can use the music. Now you got rats in your thing with hoodies and chains and the rats just dancing to the music, and they all, the basketball players are jumping over the Kia car, slam dunking anything. Oh yeah, blacks gonna love to go buy a Kia. Well, when do we do it for ourselves? When do we put our company out and say, okay, here it is, here's a celebrity jumping over off car? How long is it going to take? How long is it going to take? Because we already achieved so much. No, we haven't achieved what we should have been. We've been there 500 years. This time?
Didn't Ice Cube start the 3-man basketball and it's all on TV?
He did.
All right. I'll rest my case.
Brother, who is that partner with? Who is that partner with? We're talking about 100% ownership. See, I'm talking about executive ownership. Where that's one or two. You got Coca-Cola, you got Amazon, you got eBay, you got all these companies out here that exist. All these companies, and we don't have one. That's a household name.
Okay, that's not one. Conductor. Brother Conductor. Yeah. Now, You just said that you're part of a program that's training kids, right? Beyond
yep. Yep.
Okay, that's what we need to do. We need to be proactive. And then I don't know what your goal is, because I just met you, but I could challenge you to be one of those persons that will be a owner of what you want to do. That's a challenge for you to reach that pinnacle, and then have people that's backing you, that has your best interest to help you get there. And you're in company with people that will push you to your goals and help you get there in our small little ways. But that's a challenge for you to come up with that type of ownership. You know, and that's what, you know, we got to strive to do. Now we talk about these type of things on a regular basis, and we got to recognize it. And I'm just going to reiterate what Professor Rod was saying earlier, and on other shows, we do get to the point where we are controlling our businesses and ownership and land and all of that. But you have a power structure that will come in and then all of a sudden bomb you because they have this envious type of way to be, you know, they get envious of you and your achievements. So we're in a, like Brother Hembrick always say, we're in a war. And they gonna knock us down at times, but we just gotta keep picking right back up. Because you can't quit. So I'm challenging you to be one of those people in the future that's running things. And you definitely have our support, what support we can provide. So, you know, that's I want to encourage you to go in that direction and keep doing what you're doing. You know, it's like Professor Ross said, it's a protracted struggle. And we just got to keep pushing forward, man.
Can I add to that, please?
Okay, Sister Linda, go ahead.
Yes, it's something that Professor Ross said, and he was saying that, you know, times are changing, life changes. So the conductor, as you said about the corporations, well, we need to look beyond the corporations. And when you mention women, why don't we think about people like Oprah Winfrey? And when you talk about Black women, see, you're talking about me. And then Layla Ali, all of these women own their own corporations, and they have more foundations these days instead of corporations. And they are all household names. And then when you talk about, I'm going to start with Oprah Winfrey. Like I said, she is a self-made millionaire, a billionaire probably. And she has not only just the magazine, which you probably know of, the O magazine, but she also has a school. Did you know that she in South Africa? She owns a school for women, many, many women, not just 10 women or 12 women, I'm talking thousands of women. And then here in America, she has the Angel Network, which is a whole nother foundation that gives back to children here in America. So, and then I mentioned Layla Ali, that's Muhammad Ali's daughter. She has a foundation, it's not a corporation, it's a foundation, a nonprofit foundation. She actually just sends children to school. She has a TV show, if you're not familiar with it, it's on her own network. She also does something like just simple things. When you were mentioning, like, you know, you can do things with your hands, she owns a company and an organization that makes the hair salon, I mean, the blow dryers for young girls and curling irons. And she gives to back to them, to young girls in the communities all across the country. So there's millions of women like this, Black women, if you say are not a household name, but yes, they are household name. And how you can do that, you can look in the Essence magazines, Ebony magazines, or some of your magazines that you look through, that men look through. So yes, there are many people, even not just women, men. Think about Magic Johnson. He owns right there in LA, or he did. He owned the movie theater and many other things, the Starbucks.
And like the Professor Ross said, it might not be in their names, but he owns it and has owned it for years. And he's continuing even through the pandemic. And then his wife, Cookie, who's a millionaire, she has a company, a corporation for jeans for Black women, well, all women. But she wanted to focus on women who had curvy hips. So there are many people who are household names. So we just have to grow beyond the things that we know, because it's still happening. It's always happening over the last 100 years, and it's going to continue happening. So you are correct in many instances, but we got to just expand our imagination and expand our boundaries, even if we have to go all the way to Africa, like it was mentioned before. And that's all I have to say about it.
I think we have a very strong statement when it comes to the entertainment side. When it comes to our entertainment, there's a very heavy entertainment side that comes to entertainment. But as I said before, when our young Black men, our young women who are most intelligent graduate from Yale University, they don't want to really go into entertainment. They're ready to be, you know, going to doctors. They're ready to be lawyers. What about the ones that want to be RNs and nurses? Where are the Black companies for them? You see, it's always entertainment. When it comes to the sports and the we know we can send a billion people there and you can make billions in that. But what about when it comes to our registered nurses and our CNAs? And when they get ready to graduate, they're struggling around looking for somewhere to go because nobody want to open up a Black hospital. No, because I'd rather open up and go get a basketball team. It's cool. It's no problem because we're doing that. We want to set the change up so that when our Black women go get there, they don't have to go because, you know, you hey, come twerk in my video. That's the job for them. Come get in this video and twerk. Come get in this video and do this and do that. Now, I know there's a lot of educators that get in there that got the friends to set up, but let's just talk about the real from the ground floor of it up. When it comes to the young women, I get that. Messed up in school, something might have happened, and they're working hard to listen in. You know, it's very normal for women to strip in college. Oh, she's just stripping to get through college. It's normal. It's normal. It's okay. Why do women have to strip? Men don't do it. Men can figure out a way to get it set up in place. So there's no outlet for our young women where we can set up and say, here's this foundation that's for you in the sense that we can control without it having to be in a sexual position outside of other aspects. Because if they go into school, they have no part to depend on anybody else once they graduate with that super master degree. They're in everybody else's hand. So our most educated, the most powerful Blacks end up in everybody else's hand because we fail to develop the manufacturing, the production part on a Coca-Cola level to do what we need to do. With all due respect, it's just a new season. It's a new Black man coming to the forefront. It's too late to prepare for him because he's already here. With all due respect, I can't accept that.
All right, brother. I digress. We just gonna go around real. We heard from Rob, Professor Rob, Miss Linda. We're gonna see if the rest of the panel have a final question because we're gonna conclude after this. Okay, Sister Aziza, anything?
No, not at this moment. It was very insightful. Thank you.
All right, thanks for coming. All right, Brother Doctor.
Yeah, like I said, you know, Professor Rye, you know, he's right, and his brother got to understand. I agree with everything you said, my brother. Corporations on that grand scale, like the other sister just said, you know, you forget about Oprah and all the people like her. And I can't remember the name of the brother who was on The Breakfast Club, the contractor that's building all these buildings, a billionaire. I remember seeing a little story on a brother that built the Compton Shopping Center, I believe. He has his own corporation, and he was upset because I think McDonald's only let him build McDonald's or corporation. I've been in a little kind of circle. I don't know a lot of people, but I met a few people, a lot of brothers who have their own businesses. Like Brother Rod and Sister said, you just don't know their names, man. It's a lot of people that own brothers that own stuff. It's not out there. Matter of fact, I have a partner I talked to that's up in Sacramento. Sister opened up her little boutique out there in a white area. And they came in and found out it was Black-owned. Nobody would patronize it. So she got one of her college friends after a few months, you know, put up the sign under new ownership just to be the face. That store sells out. She's making millions, man, because they think it's white owned. But she has her business, man. I hear what you're saying. You're doing something with the youth. And I guarantee you, brother, if you get that program working, if you get that off the ground, you're going to be surprised by these brothers that's going to come make contact with you that own these businesses and going to throw you some ideas, man, that you'll say, oh, I didn't know you guys owned this or you did this or we did that. You're going to be surprised, man, when you start getting in that circle and mingling around people like-minded like you that own businesses, man. It's there, man. It's a lot of hitting. Just unfortunately, man, that we devalue, undervalue. But it's a lot there that kind of keep it on a low profile so you keep making their money, man. Because like you said earlier, once they find out it's black on, nobody wants to patronize it, man. And I've been there before, man. I know what that feels like. You know, and it's tough, man. It's tough. But there are corporations out there that's black owned. You do your research, brother, you'll find them. You'll find it, man. It's just not publicized a lot. They're doing their business and just going on about life, man. You will see them when you get your stuff rolling and it gets big. They'll come to you with ideals. And another thing, man, you know, you know, why be Coca-Cola? I like to be the guy that sells sugar to Coca-Cola. Let me sell them the sugar. You want to be a construction company. Nah, I like to be the guy to sell you the nails, man, or the lumber. You know, it's a lot of ways, man. You can make more than, money or being big business, man. You don't have to be Coca-Cola. Be the guy that sells the aluminum of Coca-Cola. Be the guy that sells the nails. I mean, the sugar. All the other ingredients in there that's killing us. I mean, I don't know why you want to be like Coca-Cola. That's killing us, man. I don't know why you want to be McDonald's. That's killing us. You know, all the big corporations you look at, man, they're killing us. They're giving us diabetes. We're slowing slide death. But, you know, you're talking about companies. I agree. You're talking about electric cars. Yeah, man, you're going electric car company. But don't forget, man, those car companies need batteries. They need
There's
a lot of parts to that electric car company, man, that you can go train on every part.
Yeah, they train on every part. You got to train on every part. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Okay, man.
They train on every part. And I didn't mean Coca-Cola as it want to be like Coca-Cola. I meant its brandy name. You can go anywhere. People, when you say Coca-Cola anywhere in the world, people just know what it is. There's no question about it. When you say you want a Coca-Cola, people already know, oh, I want that. And that's what I mean by the level of business. When somebody says a company name, when you go anywhere to any city, any state, anywhere you go, everybody know what Coca-Cola is. So that's what I mean by brand recognition. I'm talking about having black companies that have the brand recognition as Coca-Cola, not researching and looking for it. You say Coca-Cola, people already know exactly what it is. That's what I'm saying. After 400 years being here, we don't have that. And that's what's unacceptable to me.
Okay. Brother Doctor, let me go to Hembrick, and then we're going to go to Sister Making It Happen, and then we're going to conclude. All right, Brother Hembrick. Okay, he's not available. Sister, Make It Happen.
Yeah, that definitely is unacceptable, you know, for all the time and money and resources that we have put here after so much time that there are no, you know, brand recognitions in this time. But there have been, like the Real McCoy, you know, there have been things that have brand names that are still around. And there are women that are doing things. I know a group of young women, you know, came together recently and put together a greeting card company, you know, with Aya. You know, these young women graduated from college and, you know, and they came together, put a team together and created a company that is in, you know, corporate stores and, you know, doing very well. You know, also cryptocurrency, one of the biggest Bitcoin people out there is a sister, you know. So, I mean, there are things happening There should be more. We should have more. You know, we've had a lot of destruction happening as we build up. We get destroyed because of many holes that we need to provide for ourselves as a community, you know, in terms of security and taking care of the things that we build and protecting them and securing them so that they have a legacy and they can last a long time. But, you know, you're starting. You're starting in a place. And again, all praises to you that your work that you're doing with the young people will manifest into something great. And this is a time of branding and rebranding. So good luck with what you're doing. And look forward to hearing about the work you're doing.
Thank you.
So Brother Conductor, leave us with something, man. And we could do this again another time.
I just want to be really thankful for the opportunity to be able to kind of speak. Just want to, you know that there is a great change. I know, I just want people to understand in the Codex Gagas, which is the devil's Bible, it says that Lucifer does not want a man poor, but he'll rather man be rich and wealthy because he spends his time with lasciviousness, whipping, and drunkenness. But a poor man spends his time praying to God. So he'd rather men be rich than poor. So there are seasons that happen in the ages where, you know, you look and see as a great devourer, you look for what you can devour. And when the season, you have devoured everything around you, as we see right now, when there's nothing to eat, we really have nothing in our way to move where we need to move now. Because right now we're in a devouring state where there's no food. Lucifer was not sad when Sodom and Gomorrah was destroyed, because if you were devoured, you devoured every single there in everything in Sodom and Gomorrah. So when you walk away, you don't care. Everything has been eaten. There was nothing there I could eat. You know what I'm saying? That's how he looked at it. That's how it was in the Bible. So we're in the same season right now. So when we look at, oh, the Illuminati or the devil or this part is going to hinder us or stop us from doing this, we ready to get money into our pockets and get rich. It's up to us to hold true to the light. So as we can prepare ourselves for the children of shadows, we just get ready for what we need to do, because they're already talking about the UFOs. So prepare and understand, please understand that it is our season. You know what I mean? And there's nothing going to be in our way. We need not fear any more longer. There is nothing to fear in our way. There is nothing to stand. There is nothing for them to devour any longer. It has already been finished and it's time for light. So we just press forward with all due respect. Amen.
All right, brother. I appreciate you coming this evening and sharing with us. And we're gonna look to see you come back and give us some more information and the progress that you're making with these children. That's an awesome thing. I want to thank everybody for coming this evening and making this a fruitful evening. Professor Ra, what do we have for Monday?
Oh, Monday. I did not send you some information for Monday.
Yes,
I do. The sister name, she deals with health. She got her own corporation. I'll send you that information. If you give me a second, I'll look up her name right quick. She's out of Atlanta, and she deals with health strategy, something like that. But I'll give it to you.
Own
company. Just a minute.
Okay.
Her name is Anna Harris Paris, and she deals with self care. Wrote a book, Self Care: Revolutionary Approach to Self Care.
Anana.
I gotta get you that information.
Okay, so for next Wednesday we got Kawabina Sakiti Jijaga Rasuli. That's the brother of Straw that's been on our show before, and the nephew of Geronimo Pratt. And the topic is the sad, embarrassing, dangerous state of Black music. So that should be some good information that we're going to receive. So again, I want to thank everybody for coming this evening. And we're going to keep doing this until we can't do it. And hopefully we'll be able to pass it on when we can't do it. So everybody have a good evening. Conscious Corner, and each one teach one.